This is a production of Cornell University.
And the student assembly meeting on October 23rd is about to begin. The first thing is that whenever Chelsea is ready, we're going to do roll call.
I'm sorry.
Unexcused. Great, we're going to move on with our agenda. The first thing on the agenda is the approval of the October 16th meeting minutes.
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve on the floor. Is there a second? I am going to ask that we approve these minutes by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent from anyone in the audience, or if there's someone who's ex officio and can't actually dissent, could you let someone know if there's an error? Great. So if there are no errors and there is no dissent, I would like to say that these are approved. Great. Now we're going to move into open microphone, CBT Batista.
Hello to anyone in the audience or the general public. If you'd like to come forward and speak about an issue or a problem with the assembly, you can come see the table and say your name in here. And seeing none, we're going to pass over the microphone.
Great. The first thing on our agenda is food security presentation by our Vice President for Finance, Domenico, and our Community Life Committee Chair, Emma Johnson.
Just like to find what the community is, kind of the buzzword that we all know, what the government is. So
safe and efficient to maintain a healthy and active lifestyle. So, just to give a little context on the problem, so the Virginia Cornell has been doing about 20% in the past 5 years. And then the cost of living on campus prison and also the cost of living on campus prison close to 30% in my neighborhood. So 30% living on campus, that's the main thing. And then, so when, I just want to make a decision realize this is a problem, is to put a few people on staff to work on the issue of future. But given that these people have full-time jobs, I partner them to both get their attention to this patient and priority. So we have a few administrations on it, and then we also have lunches that happen every day on campus. Some of our different activities, so we have like, a lot of community lunches, community lunch, and then student staff, and then we have community association community lunch. So it's kind of like a red flag that students are going to these lunches every single day, and it's also only 1 year that they're getting these lunches. So 2 other years are going to be some students aren't financially able to get a meal plan subsidized.
Sorry, student assembly members, if you guys want to move into the audience or so you can see the screen, feel free to do that. Yeah, and if you also have it if you want to look at it on the big screen, though. I saw some people move into the audience. It's fine.
Okay. So the last thing that we are dealing with is like a high level of student literacy. So that's basically just the fact that like students have examples like lack of knowledge on what they call food and how to access it. So it's kind of become like we're conflating with the team like ramen. We are like conflating with the fact that people gain parts of the team. And it's like really doesn't match that way. It's like something kind of like going through success. I'm just thinking so much from this. So the next thing that we're going to talk about is just like our mission and our purpose. So I'm just going to read our mission statement out loud. So to fight the problem of food insecurity on Cornell campus by providing access to healthy, affordable food and increasing food diversity. And like our purpose of doing that is to develop a community cooperative with Cornell students that provide financial aid and education programs on healthy and cost-effective eating. So this is kind of like removing the barriers to healthy eating. So I think it's really easy for us to say like people should eat more vegetables, people should eat less processed foods, but like that kind of ignores the fact that this food isn't always accessible, this food isn't always affordable, and people might not just like know what they're doing. So the three things that we're going to talk about are food cooperatives, financial assistance for the food, and how we can go about solving food literacy. So I'll talk about the cooperative and the literacy aspect, and I'll turn over to Matt. So, the definition of a food cooperative is basically like a market where people who are purchasing the food are also having an active role in the decision making process of like where the food is coming from and how it's being sourced. So, for us, in our case, we'd be like food for students and students would be making the decisions about the food. So some sources that we talked about having the food come from, again, like a preliminary presentation, are like Filling Hill, which is a senior farm. We have like, a farm that's very much in the street school if they were providing the food for this. We have the Friendship Foundation Network, which is basically like a nonprofit and it says that actually it saves 500,000 pounds of food a year from going to the landfill, which is like from places like Wiley. And then like working with local farms, like an agriculture hub here in the location. We're hoping to have it in the Village Great Hall. So the current food pantry is 66 Thursday, which is kind of our walk in the name of the college town. So this is like what we thought was like the central location and also just like the place where like students are going in and out of every day. And the funding, again, now we'll talk about, we hope to get it from Student Helping Student and using that momentum to kind of build like alumni outreach and our own types of fundraisers. Okay, and then the next slide is on our food literacy and education. So I think like The thing that really sets our vision apart from what other coalitions have done is like how holistic it is. So this coalition about like 121 is the most recent time I have about like three pantries. So that's kind of providing like non-perishable for the students. Not only things that they're cooking, just like things that they can eat, making all their freshest meals. And then also campuses that have done like solely food literacy programs, so it's like campuses like Harvard. So our program is a little different in that we want to combine both of them. So it's like having cooking courses put on and also having the food there for students, and providing them with rentals of kitchen, like off of campus. Kind of more than buy fresh food, you probably won't have like access to a lot of like the tools that you need to cook food for yourself. So this is like a really good area then. And then also have an educational program, so it's like teaching how they can become eligible for SNAP benefits and how they can kind of like get the most bang for the buck out of the food they buy. And then doing like meal planning, like some of the teaching programs and other things that we have on campus.
So I'm kind of going to talk about some of the statistics, and this is at a pretty high level right now, and all this has changed to a very like big estimate on things. We really wanted to kind of put kind of paper and get a good start with this. So in terms of the financial structure, I think this is a pretty crucial part of our plan, something that differentiates it from other qualities or other cooperatives or other food shelves, because it's kind of trying to do both at the same time. So for the full payment, the way that works is just like any other food cooperative, if you've ever seen them, basically you buy into a plan and then have access to the food bank to be open to students who don't demonstrate any sort of financial need or any need for sort of assistance, but they would still be able to eat through these other food cooperatives. And the reason why we wanted that to be a part of the plan is because we saw stigma associated with being a food producer, especially at a place like Cornell, where we're supposed to be ideally educating and shouldn't be a problem here, but it is, especially problematic. So that's kind of the first one. But the second way that we would pay for this is through certain subsidies. So we look to set up a small endowment that would be able to kick out money that will help subsidize students who demonstrate financial need. We're still looking at best ways to investigate financial needs. I think the way it would work if you sit down with a counselor, probably not a student, hopefully an administrator who evaluates your financial need on metrics not associated with your financial aid, recognizing that people on financial aid are not necessarily the only people that are food insecure. You could be looking at people who are in the middle class and they might be on less financial aid, but their parents and them are scraping by to pay their kind of expected family contribution, which might not include, you know, pretty high food costs and $9 in advantages that matter by them. And the last way that so we're looking to pay for this is through a SNAP or food stamps, things like that. We obviously haven't done much of an investigation there. There's a lot of single barriers and hurdles to make it eligible, but something that's on the table and something that we would invest in. So this is just a great potential layout. I am not a designer of grocery stores, so this is just to give you an idea of what this might look like. It's not going to be a huge space, probably have three or four small produce display cases that would be able to use how produce in the same way that you might see it at a wedding in your car or anywhere else. Shelves that you'd be able to have things that are not perishable, so maybe kale, bread, and sort of contributions that areas like locations in the area where we produce, and then a couple of factors help pay for the food, and then you have a few employees working there throughout the year. So, this idea of cost, these are some pretty rough estimates, but the play cases, the shelving, those are all things that we found online from large distributors, these sorts of things, in grocery stores. In terms of painting costs and flooring costs, we estimated those according to the websites and square footage and the types of paint that we have there. And then, as part of what we're asking for, and I'm going to go into a little bit about where we're looking to ask this money from among other places, but we're also hoping to get started on labor and gas and electric costs for 2 to 3 years. And the reason for that is that we want this to be, when we pass this or the renovation, we want this to be a sustainable thing from the beginning. So our sustainable thing for at least the next 2 to 3 years, and then during those 2 to 3 years, actively looking into investigating alumni donations, student-driven donations, things of back work so it's more sustainable in the long run. And then hopefully, like I said, you develop some sort of small empowerment that can help us about that. So when we're looking at that, we came to an estimate around $230,000 to $250,000, assuming that the space is free. Where we're looking to access this money from is specifically the Student Health and Student Grant. That's my conversation that I've had with Matt Henderson and some others. And there's just a huge amount of barriers and structures that need to go into place that need to happen for this to be a possibility. So we brought up the financial review committee, the students that were there last week, and basically the way it works right now is the large funds dedicated to helping emergency situations for students on financial aid. But the way it works is the interest generated from that endowment is about doubles, triples, and quadruples the amount that it's actually been traditionally used for the past 10 years. So we're looking to draw a small percentage, and not a small percentage, but a percentage of that fund and put it into paying for this initiative. We're also open to investigating other funding. These are some resources. I'm a college student. I'm getting in contact with a number of administrators today. Professors who are looking to be advised with this. And we'd be more than happy to hear you guys in other places that we can investigate from the So in terms of the next steps, this is probably the next 2 to 3 months, but building our network and connecting to you guys all, that means to be involved, if you're interested in becoming involved, that means contacting all the relevant administrators. Moving on, that works into our second step is outlining the final proposal. So instead of just saying, we think it's $50,000 for the bank that spent 30 seconds on Google search, we can say we contacted a large distributor of refrigerators and they paid us from $57,000 and $57,300, and this is where we're going to buy them from them themselves. This would be a very comprehensive plan. So when we propose that for the money wherever we're asking for it from, we have an exact amount and know exactly what the layout and it looks like. And then finally, we would tackle them and hopefully through the student health and student strength. So I know that was a lot of process, but we're open to taking questions. And remember that this is a preliminary stage, so there might be times where we can say we don't have any answers, but there probably are going to be answers where we're going to need to find out.
Thank you guys so much for presenting today. If anyone in the audience would like to ask a question or make a comment, feel free to just raise your hand and make sure that I get your attention. Or you get my attention. Do you want to go first? You can come up to the microphone.
Because even though the numbers are staying the same, it's students are getting more heavily impacted by this. So yes, tuition and grant aid has stayed the same, but that spend over 5 or 6 years ago is maybe one of the problems here in the first place. So yes, we might be at the same place that we were 5 or 6 years ago with tuition and grants. I think that what I've been seeing is still a problem, even though that the grant aid is going up. And the other question was support outside of health. We haven't really approached from outside, to be honest, and I think that state college is close to this plan, at least initially. I think that it cuts into some of their customer base, and I think it affects them probably negatively. That being said, if the money is available, I think we have a pretty strong argument for why it should be there. I guess the reason why we think we're not buying is going to be opposed is we just, from what we've seen, they have a pretty diametrically opposed mission in a lot of ways to the WU. I'm not saying they don't want to teach students, they don't want students to be healthy, but we think they have a pretty high priority on aligning very high quality food. They like putting on events that, we went to the Arbor Center, and if you don't have a meal, it's $20 to go in. Right? Like, things like that. And it was amazing. That food was incredible, but it was, really, local stores would be, high cost. And I don't think that they're recognizing that there are a group of students on the campus who aren't looking for, the most organic, highest quality food. They're looking for healthy food that's affordable, that is going to sustain them and make sure that they're able to, feed their family. So obviously Cornell is not going to be a part of the discussion. I'm skeptical that they may be a partner, but I'm not opposed to it. And I think we are opposed to it. I just spent a thought on our very short discussion.
Great. First is Representative Fridman.
First of all, the representative, thank you for the massive effort. This is fantastic. This is a great idea. I guess I have questions about the goal and ask of this. So in terms of the goal, I think it'd be very great to articulate internally and be able to externally who exactly this is going to help come. Right? Are we talking about people that experience food insecurity on the basis of being taken from growing every 2 weeks? Are we talking about experience and a chronic food insecurity? Because the solution for those two steps, we just find that will be pretty different. So, if you feel how that works, you need to be able to know what we're prioritizing and how we can go through it. And the second question has to do with where the cost effectiveness comes from in the institution. So, to me, it seems that it comes from a few places. Either we're able to do something more efficiently than anybody else, we're able to ask for money that's given to us by people that have it, whether that's alumni, grants, or anything that doesn't relate to it. And the third item is going to be a corporate sponsorship or partnership that we're trying to make sure it's not predatory on students and does not put it in the list we can't do it. So, yeah, the first question is who's starting to count and where the savings are coming from.
I think the CEO is the first problem. So, we had a lot of meetings with the CEO last year, and at the end of the day, constantly stress us with the stigma associated with the problem. So I think the reason why we're going to use customer solutions for students all ends of discussion or financial needs is that it doesn't ostracize anyone who might be suffering from food financial needs. So the fact that they can get food from the same place and just placing 30 students together, getting the same portion of food, but getting it at a different cost that kind of suits what they can afford. I guess that's the reason why we need to work. The same food, but it's a different price.
Further elaborate on that second question is our goal or our vision to have sort of a tiered model, right? So you actually hit everybody on that model, right? So you're just a student who wants to be a part of the cooperative because you might, buying food at grocery, all the sorts of homes, need for you, but you're not on any sort of financial aid and you don't have any need, you can be a part of this, right? If you're somebody living in the community paycheck, you might be able to get subsidized to a pretty small extent, right? Maybe $10, $10 cheaper, and you subsidize to a small level. And if you're somebody who's really needed this year, right? If you're on every day, and you eat one meal a day, and you see them in it, and that's where it's found at wherever a lot of you sponsoring a meal for that day, this is money for you, right? And every level of that is, you know, like negotiated, and we're looking to sell some sort of algorithm, some sort of way to investigation that the counselor would meet with people before they sign up for this, or when they sell out or whatever, be able to do that sort of right discrimination for them to come in that kind of answer to that. We've seen a lot of really successful models from other places around the country. So Michigan State, for example, they actually have negotiated deals with the area, food distributors who are actually aware of the cost and understanding that it's a good thing, and they provide food at a discounted rate. So that's where some cost savings come in. Cost savings comes in from being able to buy this stuff in a larger bulk than a place like 7-Eleven. So will we be able to get this much cheaper than Wegmans? I'm not sure. I hope so. Hopefully that cost savings comes in the first place. Will we be able to get this cheaper than, a 7-Eleven or Jason's or even Green Star in the future? We think that'll be able to happen. And in terms of corporate sponsorships, we definitely complicated, right? I would be able to think that business like him would spend money investing in these sorts of things, because in a lot of ways I don't think it's appealing to customers for that, right? Because it's paying for people who are probably not going to like them in the first place. That can be a little more tricky when you're doing something like me who didn't do this a year or 2 years ago. But that being said, we think it's one way to investigate this, to at least get the cost to be the same and increase convenience, which is huge, right? Because a lot of students that are probably students this year don't have cars to be able to go drive away, and so being able to come here and get someone from the same price does save them some convenience, right? And prevent them from being able to buy, for $9, right? I would rather that
Great. I promise if you've raised your placard before, I have you on the list. Next is Representative Pizarro-Shvili.
So just a couple of questions for you, mostly about the proposal cost and how you want to identify the reason. So you're working with how does that financial aid with managing the public in terms of if the difference is probably right? So there's a few things that don't really add up to you. So labor costs for your new district, right? I don't know where that's coming from. In addition, you start talking about output. That's also labor costs, and that's also skilled labor in a large way, which would be a lot more expensive than the number of here. Now I realize it's a very early investment. Some other comments about stealing market. Why do you think certain people are doesn't matter what the topic is not. Students care mostly about the need, I would say. Of course, there is food security, but if there is a place looking at campus, it doesn't matter if you have to go, aren't you going to have to stop by and go there? It's great, especially if you have to drive out of the way. So I think that there will be some more students in there if you're engaging in most of what's happening as a whole lot. But those are some financial comments I have.
So I'll just try to mention right here that the labor costs at the skilled labor counselors, I really have been necessary to take on some of that burden in the best case scenario. And work that into the job description, obviously administrators stretch. So another option is some sort of online survey or things like that that can automate this process. There's a lot of ways that you can go about this on that end. In terms of the working the store costs, there are a couple of ways to solve it, right? You can have students who are on financial aid, who present financial assistance, be a part of the cooperative and work there, and so you're not paying any shit for your food, which cuts down on the cost significantly. The $50,000 number, if I had a written down here, is a projection of 3 employees working on a shift, 2 on at every given hour of the day, and I think about 5 or 6 hours of it being open for about 6 days. So being open from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. Another student of going home, or maybe potentially opening in the day. So you're only looking at probably 60 hours of being spent in one day, like $70 over 3 years, probably 32 to 40 days per year. That would be that 50,000 number. I could do the math again if it's pretty close. In terms of these students caring about convenience, I agree that there are a lot of barriers in partnerships. These are also organizations that are understanding that not all partnerships are really like competitive, right? There's actually suppliers who are offering slightly different deals or things like that. And Wegmans is not really a pretty good company, which is going to be taking into the areas that they're affected, and I think that some things can be negotiated at least to get to the point where their supplier is like their old friend or something like that. You know, like, it's very early, but it's coming along.
Next is
Max
Whiterod.
Hey, I just wanted to respond to some other people's comments. First of all, this is great. I love where this is going. I just wanted to note that there was a comment coming from somebody saying that basically saying this problem may not even exist. And I'd say it's so hesitant. The burden of proof is on those individuals to prove that it does not exist. And also, I'd like to note that in the past, working with Cornell Mining has been extremely difficult, and they generally don't want to do anything. I'd really like to see this actually happen. I don't want to see, like, 2 years of fighting with Cornell Mining to get any kind of movement. Maybe it'd be good if we reach out to Cornell Mining again and get very close to being gotten to maybe they could be a cheaper supply or something, or, you know, okay, I'm assuming it's obvious it's happening, but otherwise,
great. Do you think we can go back to you guys responding every two people unless it's a direct question? Great. Next is Representative Nassan.
I have a question. First question, do you have any numbers?
Second speaker's list because there's a lot of people who would like to ask questions. Next is Gina Giambattista.
Thanks for this. I just wanted to, as you were talking about whether it's Wegmans or Tom, remind you the conversations you had with the director of community relations and relationships that Cornell has, not in Tom, but to for-profit entities, and probably you get. John, who's the early stages that you're talking about.
Next is Vice President Warshaw.
So I'm coming from the perspective that last year I worked pretty tirelessly on having a winter farmers market, with student-run farmers market, and I got a lot of feedback that we could get back completely. Basically, I was talking to Jacob Miller, who was then president of the student farmers market, and he was like saying that like the farmers who like they work with would not want to do that, like it wouldn't be feasible. And how Cornell Dining was completely opposed to anything that was in competition with them. So this kind of, I know this job theater is different and you're adding a different layer to it, but it definitely seems like it's a similar kind of way you're kind of bringing up produce to students. Otherwise, the only other thing that could potentially use is using Green Star. So I remember last year I talked to representatives of Green Star and they wanted to be a partner with if we ever had like a winter farmers market. And then some farmers I talk to, so they have indoor greenhouses that can grow produce in the winter. But otherwise, like for me personally, having kind of worked with a lot of different groups of people last year on this kind of issue, Cornell Dining like would not have this at all.
So I mean, so I guess a couple things. So it's funny to say he's actually from my roommate, and he I've been talking to him for hours on this and stuff like that. He thinks what needs to happen and should happen. So that's another point. I think to answer the fact that Cornell Dining will be opposed to this, I guess the argument that I would make to them, something that I think is very persuasive and that we're on the right side of, is that if there are students on this campus who are food insecure, it proves that what you're doing, which is being functionally monopoly, is providing food on this campus, is not working for everyone. And we have a solution for you that we're paying for, right? Because the income students are paid for by students over a number of years. We have a solution that provides an answer to that. And if you're not able to do that, there's no reason why you should block us from doing that besides being a competitor and a monopoly that's driving out a possible food program that would be able to provide students who are food insecure, who are not being able to eat more than one or two meals a day in a healthy way. Like, I just have a very tough time finding out which way to counter-argument that because they want to suck more money out of us. And I'm willing to go back against any sort of Cornell Dining initiative that tries to push back against these sorts of things.
Next is Representative Yang.
So I have some not really information, just two pieces of information. One is that what is covered under financial aid right now is typically the traditional meal plan. I forgot what that is called, but it's the 14-year basic 100-year meal. As of right now, it's
fair traditional.
As of right now, I had that last year. 14-year basic is pretty sustainable. In terms of the fact that I just bought bagels every morning from somewhere, Target, and then but the other piece of information is, as well as one of the questions you considered, where would you go if you don't have a safety location? So right now, there's a lot of programming issues because of lack of space in federal industry. So the question is, should you not be able to find a safe space, would you have somewhere else?
I think there is space on campus that we can find. I feel pretty confident that that's the one of my most worried things when we start in here. I think there's not a super utilized room if you're not getting as far as it. But? Okay, but I mean, for sure, there are a lot of spaces on the campus that can use, and in response to their traditional meal plan, I think it's bad as a concept, it's just a little bit mistaken, and I think that for some people 14 meals might work, but I think for a lot of people it might not, and the idea that you can only have 2 meals per day is not sustainable. I don't know any dietitians who say that that's sustainable, and even if you can, maybe not one day or one day, I just don't think that's a proper solution. And the second thing is that if you are not on financial aid, you can still be food insecure on campus. 100% of the possibility. There are people on the campus whose parents might make $130,000 or $140,000 a year, but if you have kids and debt and you're also being asked to pay $60,000, there might not be a lot of money left over, and you're not going to pay for it with the bare traditional plan. but you're needed to fend for yourself. And if your only option is $8 or $9 meals, you're clocking into a budget of $12, to go for an all-you-can-eat location for food, probably not something that is sustainable. So I just think it's kind of my idea to do that, like some very traditional meals. But I think some people can argue for not actually covered food for people on financial aid or for people not.
Next is Representative Vakili.
Hi, so I love this idea. I think it's really important that we have this mission of living in the community that we live in. So I wanted to bring up the issue of academic freedom. So 10 years ago, there was a class on vegetarian nutrition that Al was abruptly ended. It's taught by Colin Campbell. He's authored the Chinese study of reading study nutrition in the past 2 years. So I think it's important to, Cornell being one of the world's greatest institutions for food research, food research that we really should voice the faculty and people drive the demand for the testing and just drive supporting, really discuss what classes we want, some of the classes on, defined classes on the dairy industry and other classes. You won't find any on veganism or vegetarianism, and it's important that the students should just be represented in the academic institution as well. And the other thing I want to mention is that regarding my comments about the vending machines, I'm working with Cornell Dining to bring healthier food vending machines. If you join me, you can choose get 5 o'clock and maybe you'll be at Cornell Dining. Feel free to shoot me an email. And the second initiative I've been working on is creating a farmers market for college. I've been working with Dylan and John for that.
Great. Next is Erin Lee.
Demographic people who just blow their manual
is very different than business community or community secure. I'm not saying that like if you were to secure, you'd be able to spend like $8 on for you. Yeah. So it's I completely agree that managers that is what the community is, because literally provide the whole range of services that like their efficiency. But our goal isn't necessarily just to provide local food, it's to provide affordable food. So that's the reason why we're really just trying to fix the problem that we're using now, which is the food pantry that we have in the
issue. How do you get one? Okay. Representative Hoffman.
Hi. So you'll have to excuse some of my ignorance as a freshman, so I'm not exactly sure about how all of the meals, how proper classroom organized the meal plan or the happen. So if your total costs are $231,000, if the store to think you said you're unsure of exactly how many kids are dependent or demonstrate need for food subsidies. I think you gave us a number of 40 to 50. If it were 50 kids on the campus, the school could pay for a golden better plan for them and only spend $162,000 a year. So what is the tangible benefit of having one single place that they can get food, if the school could spend less money and give them the best meal plan that they offer?
Sure. I think there are a couple of fundamental answers. I think that I put a lot of support in the beginning as well, in terms of food insecurity, right? I think the problem is that the paradigm that we might be operating in that we don't even want to start in the next. People are eating food, people are having a meal or two a day. I don't think anybody is not eating at least once a day. I really don't. That they might be, but I think that more common than there are a lot of students who are maybe having to do a day in the morning and then the box and not running cheese at night because the dad's all working on the board. And to me, that is not food security. And I think there are probably hundreds of students on the campus that have that as the way they go about eating meals. So I think the 50 is a low estimate. The second argument that I think is a more persuasive one is that we're trying to provide people with the need in terms of the way they approach food and the way that they're able to use it on campus. So giving a handout to 40 to 50 really financially secure students is a good way to solve it, but it's not something that we think is sustainable. When I talk about $231,000, that's a one-time startup cost, and what you're talking about is consistently every year $162,000 to subsidize a golden family plan. So let's say this is a 5 or 10 year solution program, you're looking at $1.6 million and then $231,000. So I get what you're saying, but we're really trying to provide an empowering place on campus for people to get their food, source their food, and then run their food choices. And also, I think this is a solution for people that aren't getting food in this year, which your, just buying the golden year and then the 40 students doesn't really help.
Your time is up, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Next is Liaison Mensa.
Kind of touched on this, but I am wondering how the educational aspect of it is instructed. Would there be programs, pamphlets, or you have possibly have?
So we actually have a lot. I think this is one of the part of what can definitely happen to the students who are going to get on this campus. So there's a lot of groups on campus who are already trying to do this already, so Building Mills, the Meeting Society. Anyone who's involved in planning the food day events that are happening today and tomorrow. So we hope that we can provide cooking lessons so that people can cook with us. This is kind of why we reached out specifically to a cooperative extension person and being our advisor, because these are the programs that we put on in the Ithaca area and actually updating your general, nutrition programs where people are getting the food that they need to make meals, and they're also learning how to use those ingredients widely in order to make the highest protein and high nutrition meals. So it's kind of a great energy that we already use. We call it
our campuses because we think this is a problem that exists on campus as well as off campus.
Next is Brent Sapra. Next is Representative Batavia. Fired our first speakers list, and we're also running out of our allocated time on this portion of the agenda. So if there's anyone who hasn't spoken yet but would like to speak, please let me know now. Otherwise, we're just going to expire the 7 speakers list that's existing and then let these guys wrap up. Is that okay? Great. First is actually Representative Friedman.
The reason why most, like, you want to do the first place is that
that type of solution for research keeps it really dignified, in my opinion. Because you're having a conversation with someone that's like almost like a secret. If you're like researching that, but like this is like a hush up conversation that like, I'm not going to tell anyone what you're telling me, like we're just going to like find a solution, and we're not going to have like a broad discussion about this with the entire country. So I really think that we need to look into ways that we can like open up the discussion more.
To address these bad issues, I think it's a great point. Again, you have the only issue that places primarily are getting money from is paid for by undergraduate students, and so opening up graduate students causes some kind of tricky sort of conversation. So I don't know if you see a similar fund or something like that, or if that students are willing to pay a slightly higher cost to be part of the cooperative, but still is not really compared to anything else. There's also a good question back.
Next is about the song.
So that's the biggest one, the thing from another one. The thing you see here is that someone from Europe and the UK, but maybe they're going to do that. Then you see the situation, so the attention that you have to say is that wall. And it's a huge platform for data services, organic citizens, and so on. The other question that I had was that, figure it out on that topic, for example, they, I'm not sure they would feel the need to be more healthy than they would do if they had been solved by more than you go to the top of. But how would you entice people at my house to don't necessarily be healthy and don't want to be healthy?
I don't think we're trying to entice them out there to be healthier, right? If they want to drop $700 in their keto, they can do that, and I don't care. I think my more serious point is like, the fact that they have $700 to spend in their keto means that they have enough money to make an active decision in where they want to get their food from, and they could, you know, eat on campus and have something healthy for $700. We're looking to address people that don't have that decision, right? So this doesn't, we think that there are plenty of students that will make an active decision to say, no, I don't want that healthy food. I know that it's short term and it might be cheaper, but I am going to come off the job every night, and that is fine. Food security, having availability, giving you those things, and people that will really looking to address the people who are food insecure, and for students, you know, that 40 or 50 students, it might be 200, they are not going to make that decision every night, and, those are the people that we're really worried about addressing, not the children.
The last person is Matt Slater.
I just wanted to make a few comments. I would love to see, well, I personally don't mind subsidizing and graduating items because I like this idea so much. I would like to see if we can also get some funds out of them because student helping students is based on our funds. Also, I'd like to know that it looks like the cafe on the that's $38,000 a month for that space. The fact that we'll be able to get free space, and as I said, no, the pop shop is in college town to get free space from student agencies. So I have no doubt that this team will be able to find the rent free space. That's a huge cost saving, and that will bring down the cost of food. And also, I want to note that if I'm still around and actually get started up, I'd be the first person. I spend about $250 a month on food. I'd be willing to pay that or more because, I mean, first of all, it's convenient for me. Right now, it's 2 to 3 hours to get groceries. 2 to 3 hours. So it's going to be a green star in college town. That's not going to be cheap. Again, they're going to be paying a lot per month for their rental space, organic. There are a lot of factors that are going to make that just unattainable. And this is a really great solution. I really like to encourage a unanimous yes vote in support of the idea and calling for some specific next action as soon as possible. Just so that this gets going. Great.
Great. So thank you guys for this awesome discussion. I'm going to let you guys, you know, wrap up a little bit. And just so you guys remember, we're not voting on this. These guys are just presenting on an idea that may eventually become a resolution, hopefully in the near future. And maybe you guys can talk a little bit about your road from, you know, initiative to resolution so the newer reps can kind of hear about that. Yeah, I'll give you 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Okay. So first of all, kind of the next step, I agree, we're not going to vote, but we would love your support and for anything that you fall. Definitely shoot your Emma or myself an email, and we'll, you know, there's so much work to be done on this that we can take you up and have ownership of it. Also, you can go to the CLC, so Wednesday at 6 o'clock p.m. and March 6th, 7 and 9. Or Tuesdays at 8 on the second floor of the hall. And either of those are great opportunities to be part of this discussion and really welcome them and she can be part of that side of the thing. In terms of how we got this started, it started with a couple of discussions and an idea, and we met with a few administrators and did some really high level sort of understanding of what was going on. And it really was just starting to do some work and learning some research and talking to students and things like that. And it was at least at a very high level of what we need to be doing. And I think the other big thing is recognizing the time frame and $100,000 project. At least the way this administration works, the way Cornell works, these are 6 months, two year long sort of projects, and you need to put them in context with that. And then if you have a smaller project, you can go about it in a quicker way. If you have a bigger project, you need to be putting in a lot of background. You need to be having discussions like this, the last hour recognizing that it's probably not going to happen for another year, and being comfortable with putting that work in. I think if you're able to do that, you're going to have a more sustainable, something that you can come back to kind of different years and still going to exist, and not something that will fizzle out of you, but in kind of a, you know, half track effort at going after. So hopefully that answers your question.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for presenting today. So now we're going to move on into announcements and reports. Our first announcement is actually going to be a FARC announcement from Hotel Representative King.
Hi everyone. So actually, what we talked about in the last meeting at the Financial Review Committee was funded students. Something that right now I just quickly explained. So this did help students, but that referenced a lot was did a grant that students to the Financial Review Committee about $1.5 million, and the fees are about $72,000 per year in interest. That's how much we have per year to rebound from the grant. Now, normally these grants, on average, I think the past 10 years have been about in the low 10,000 per year. So we have about $50,000 left over. And we try to keep around $30,000, which is about $40,000 left over per year to for different projects. Now we're looking at. So right now there's 3 different ideas on the floor at our meeting. One is the food insecurity. So that was a slightly different approach than the other two ideas. The other two ideas include the unpaid internships, funding of unpaid internships, like helping to get some stipends, et cetera, giving about $2,000 to our students to help pay for their summer internships. The other idea is helping students on financial aid pay for their housing down payments. So a lot of the upperclassmen will know that getting a house or an apartment in college town requires about three months down payment. It's a lot of money for a person who doesn't have money to put it down. Now the third idea is food insecurity, and that's taking out $300,000 from the endowment, the actual endowment of $1.5 million, taking that out. So that this NHS fund will incur a little bit less in interest, but that $300,000 can go to security companies. So that's what that was referring to as the major financial factor for the food insecurity program. So this is something that might be discussing to our committee. If you're looking at concerns with the funding wise and feasibility, I guess it might be better to go to FARC. Per se, at least in terms of funding wise, we'll be looking at that. That's Friday, Friday to Saturday, October 3rd, 3:30 to 3:00. You can send an email. Our next meeting will be at 3 p.m. on the 31st. And that'll be mostly discussing, giving us 3 different ideas right now, and which idea would be most feasible and best used for the actual one. Thank you.
Great. Next, we have the dining committee announcement from the chair, Representative Kedemke.
As we had a last meeting, the community, we just basically started recapping a lot of the fabric and the that's been happening in the past 2 years. So now we're taking our availability of vegan and other things. Yeah, I think the initiative that we're looking forward to this semester is working with kind of the students and the guys essentially. So when they get to the campus and bring them up the floor, that kind of provide free food for the students. So to the specific campus, I'd be able to do something in 2007, something for an hour. So like whether it's ice cream or something. So something, or you need to ask a question, and hopefully it'll be finished.
Great. Next is a community life committee announcement by the Chair Johnson.
So we're going to have a question today, so I'm going to do it quickly. We're taking the campus forum. So we're going to have a forum that's meeting on how we can improve relationships going on with the community. This is called the opening line of discussion between going on with the greater community. We started to discuss the speakers for that, and we're really excited about what the discussion we can bring. And that would be one of the components. The other thing that we're finalizing speakers for TV, to focus on the discussion on the business topic, as well as equally important, which is mental health on campus. So we're starting to reach out to students now, so if you guys would like to attend the conference on this site, look out for emails from all your clubs and community members to sign up. We're also looking into addressing the inequities between housing on West Campus and housing in college dorms for upperclassmen. We're going to be planning a couple of workshops in the next couple of weeks that will give parents and other housing workers on campus currently kind of like a glimpse of like the different housing options that are left with us, so they can get a feeling that like there's nothing left, and if you don't have an apartment or a person who's home, to tell people that that's not actually the case, because there's options out there for them still. We're working with the UAC, and we've got the new compost line, so look out for those. Because I know all of you complaining to me that you don't understand compost line, and I know that too. And then, like I said, the food security thing, and finally, we're doing a couple of refreshment recommendations on the community, and we're working on like a great mentorship program that they hope can like increase the community between upperclassmen and like freshmen and freshman students.
Awesome. Next is Resolution 16 and Academic Calendar Announcement by EBT Batista.
Awesome. So, Representative Ferdman, if you want to back me up on anything that I talked about. So, today we also had invited the chair and vice chair of the academic calendar, as well as some people from Faculty Senate. Unfortunately, no one can make it today, but that did result in some conversations, and we're going to meet with all associated parties in the coming weeks to talk about Resolution 16 and understand more about the process with the academic calendar and where it can go forward in the future. So if anyone has anything specifically they want us to bring up in that discussion, please feel free to email myself, Representative Friedman, or Sarah, and we'll definitely relay that information forward, and hopefully that will result in those faculty and administrators coming to the Student Assembly to speak with all of us directly. Okay.
Next is a Shared Governance and International Community Announcement by VP Henderson.
Yeah, VP Kyle asked me to pass on this information. He said that I'm a member of Global on Campus, which is a committee chaired by Dean Kent Hubble and Professor James Lee. A major focus of this committee is internationalizing the student experience at Cornell, and I'm specifically working on integration of international students in campus life. I invite fellow members of the SA and the Cornell community to join me in the effort of identifying barriers and developing solutions to the issue of integration of international students in campus life, and please feel free to reach out to CIS if any of you guys are interested in that. Thanks.
Last announcement is the Tonight Report by VP for Finance, Domingo.
So we saw the Tonight, it was a very productive conversation. We've done a lot of really good work following the recommendations of the Appropriations Committee over the past couple of years. Some of the recommendations that we have moving forward were developing funding templates so they can better and we can better understand what events are being funded at in the best way. We're looking into developing office hours so people can fill out the applications better and developing minimum criteria for actually being able to apply for these things because we think there are some potentially not efficient spending going on. We'll be seeing Cornell Cinema as well as a few special project requests next week.
Now we are going to move on into business of the day. Just a reminder, if you guys want to make an announcement at this meeting, all you have to do is just email Juliana ahead of time. And the first resolution is Resolution 21, change to the SAFC guidelines.
So, two resolutions that I'm going to present to be super controversial, but that's your decision. The first is SAFC guideline changes. The SAFC co-chair called that not being in the making. Small changes just regarding conversion of records. We've had some issues with the Assembly's website. It probably has been updated for the past 2 or 3 years of the changes that have been going on here. So we've had some issues with that. We want to move the conversion of records to the Origin website that the SAP person uses. Not only is this good, it provides them the ability to update it whenever they want to. It's also a more convenient place. So we're just going to amend the charter or the bylaws of the FASC to indicate the official version of record. So the official version of record will be held on this website and not the current assembly's website. This is something they recommended. So I'm going to take any questions.
Brett Mussel?
I'm just wondering if we're going to be also amended first before we can.
No, just, I mean, technically, this is under our jurisdiction in terms of the guideline. It's really more than what the wording is as part of our bylaws and what that means in terms of what the official version of record is. In practice, it probably doesn't change much because what the SAC is going to now in the future be recommending is for students to look at their website when finding things. But it's really resolving themselves. What the official version of the record is, and basically that's our way to know what the guidelines are at the current point so that people are applying and the Appropriations Committee to separately determine what the official rules are. We know what's the most up-to-date version, and we prefer to have it. This FSD, and I agree with that, and prefer to have it here.
Great. Next is VP Henderson.
Yeah, and just to clarify, we plan on rerouting from the current assembly website where the guidelines are currently to the OrgSync website. And yeah, you just take care of it so people aren't going to like an old version or just two competing versions. But yeah, it just seems to simplify current practices of getting them online.
Is there anyone else's questions, comments?
Motion to vote.
There's a motion to vote on the floor and there is a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, before we go right into the vote, I am going to ask that Jordan explain how we're voting on this. Great, so we're going to do a placard vote. If you are in favor of Resolution 21, please raise your placard. If you are opposed to Resolution 21, please raise your placard. If you would like to abstain, please raise your placard. I got a vote of 21-0-0. By a vote of 21-0-0, the resolution passes. And now we can move right into resolution 22.
Perfect. So I'm happy to announce that it could be on the appeal for the semester, which is exciting. We actually overturned both of the SAC decisions. So the first report out was the soccer club. What happened was there were two soccer clubs last semester, and they both operated at a pretty low, or not low, but less than a median to efficiency percentage, and they decided to merge because they felt like that would be a better way for their organization to move forward. The appropriations committee, they were rejected, or they were put into a lower tier because they were assuming that they were only one group and then merged two groups. When we merge the two groups, the efficiency spending is what's earned and what tier placement you're put into, actually over 100%. And what happened was both organizations, they would apply separately, was being pushed into a lower tier, which would have actually given them more money if they were placed into the tiers they wanted to be in as one group. So this is actually a way that the team is going to be saving money in the long run. This is a pretty easy circumstance. We haven't seen this before, but the appropriation of the SAC air is not being able to communicate. This is certainly a part of school, and we will be investigating and changing the guidelines moving forward to better indicate what the merger would look like and how long it would be saved, which ultimately we think that would happen. In terms of cost two, the appropriation committee felt that the SAC air in their decision due to not recognizing that the shoes that the club was using and purchasing are actually durable goods that are part of basically the SAC decided that in their original hearing that because shoes be applied to a single person, that goes into the first-line use policy, which is 8.4.41. However, the appropriations committee felt that after further description of what happened with these shoes, approximately you can use the shoes however you want. If you want to join the club, you just walk in and grab a pair of shoes from the suitcase that they hold in their advisor's office, that it operates very similarly to that security, that you might be able to access. We might be able to operate very similarly to back security, which are funded, and if you're on a basketball team, you can walk into the room where the jersey is held and grab whatever you want and put it on, and those are funded. And the appropriations committee felt this is pretty similar.
Great, so now we're going to go into discussion. The first person on the speaker list is EVP Batista.
Just so you can explain to everyone in the room, why was there a second round of SASC appeals, and is that something that normally happens?
So the first one, no, it's not something that normally happens. The first one was by mistake. I lost that email so that's why they appealed late. The second group was an issue of communication issue with the SAC. They were told the wrong behavior, something like that, and also they were pushed back. Also, logistically speaking, we probably needed a second round of SAC appeals anyway, so it worked out that I screwed up and particularly had more SAC appeals than we could handle. We would have two appeals in our last appropriation committee meeting, that was like 8:15 or 8:30, it would have been unfair. It worked out. That's the reason. And all the work we've done for the next semester.
Trustee Gitlin.
So that was a practical matter. The committee, we're really not sure. They put on socks, they said, before they put on the shoes. It wasn't part of their decision. Unfortunately, the SAC did not have a guideline on whether or not it was clean or healthy. but, you know, the organization seems to work for them, and that's what we first. We are going to figure out this and being part of this decision require a lot of work. We are looking at figuring out ways to track server goods from the SAC and figuring out the best way to maintain it for a long period of time. So if you're really jazzed about server goods and tracking them, making sure that you're strong through the system, I'd be more than happy to have you to be part of that project because I'm not able to be part of it.
Perfect.
Is there anyone else who has a question, comment, or is particularly jazzed about anything that FASC is working on? Representative Bracken.
What?
Bracken.
There's been a motion to vote. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, before we go into a vote, Jordan is going to do her little spiel.
Appropriate appropriations have been made by the decision of the FASC, the outdoor requirement board, and other city FN members, and other funding decisions require two-thirds vote of the FN department.
Great. This vote works the same way as it has last time we did FASC appeals. We want to overturn it. We need two-thirds vote. So, if you would like to approve the resolution as written, with the appeal decisions as written, please raise your placard.
Did we lose a few people?
Yeah.
I got 19.
I
got 19.
19-0-0.
You didn't do no one.
I mean, everyone voted. I mean, if anyone would like to oppose, if anyone would like to abstain, that's what I thought. By voting 19-0-0, this passes. Thank you guys, and thank you, Matt. Now we can move on to new business. Now we can move on to new business. The first act of new business is Resolution 23. Moving on to anyone who would like to speak. Joseph? There's been a motion to move this to business today. Is there a second? Is there any dissent to moving this to business today? Seeing none, we can move this to business of the day. And just to clarify, I was offered a position on this council prior at its inception, I suppose is the best way to put it. I just want to make sure that you talk to the people on the council if we do pass this to make sure that they can do that. All right. First on our speakers list is Representative Friedman.
Really, women's representative role was created 4 years ago, so I do think it is one that city continues to grow and develop and actually figuring out how that role can represent women on campus and those specific issues, but also represent that dialogue. And I think this is a really good way to start bridging a lot of the gaps that exist on the campus for our
community.
Great. Next is Representative Yang.
Hi. So I just have two quick questions. Would you plan on meeting with each group or club? Who are you meeting with together next? The second question is, are you creating a plan with each group or is it just a
My understanding is that the meetings weren't necessarily public for me to, the meeting minutes weren't necessarily public for me to share. But I don't think that it's out of our purview to ask for that. And I know this is confusing because it says that the type of action is internal policy. It's more of a legislation thing. And I'll be sure that, you know, if this resolution does pass and I send it off to scoring, that it gets sent to the right people on the council.
Yeah, I think we should have the council with regards to whether or not the meeting is being disclosed. But I'm sure if there are initiatives
have been working on that, like, kind of a job, you know, to make sure that people are ready to work.
And also women are that I have spoken to Jason Murphy before about having women represented on that council. I think it would be a great way to institutionalize it and showcase that there are plenty of other students that should be and are on the council. I just think it's a great way to continue that knowledge from the direction of the reps who will be sitting on the student assembly.
Ross, did you have something to say? Okay. Next is Representative Coffin.
Just really quickly, what pertinent organizations were you thinking of?
Well, there's a lot of pertinent organizations that they were looking at. I mean, I reached out to the Women's Council, Women's Resource Center, Women, Things Like That, and there's a lot of organizations. I mean, you can go online and look at those that deal with specifically.
And if you're interested in joining any of them or getting involved, we will work through all the groups before.
Next is Representative Chitcomb.
Hi, I'm going to say that this is a really great discussion. These are both questions, and one of my questions was actually just asked by Representative Kaufman. But something that I do want to keep in mind is minimizing the inclusivity of language as you want to approach sexual assault and sexual violence from all perspectives, including women on men, and including men on men, and not women, including overlapping sex. It doesn't identify as anything on.
Yeah, and we'd love to work with you, especially, I mean, if you want to get involved with it as well, and that's pretty much the message to make this a very inclusive.
I also think that at the inception of the Women's League, Women's Representative on the Student Assembly, I think the tone on campus was still in a binary for sexual assault, and I think that really revolutionized that conversation, and I think that's something that I know that we will continue to work on and make sure that we're going to be able to think that there's a big way around bringing the conversation closer so that we can talk about.
Next is Representative Tavia.
For the CSAB, is this a new piece? I mean, is this the language that you're going to be offered, or is this a piece that you have to add or fill? Are you doing their early adding or being created and also in the office of all the terms? Are they able to do that to sit on the CSAB, or is it more of a recommendation?
Yeah, it's a recommendation because I think that they don't have the power to do that, but I think that it just makes a lot of sense for working to be on that position, and it would really be.
Yeah, do you want me to give a little bit more background? I wasn't necessarily here before. So originally, Narda and I were on it when this committee started. I don't remember exactly when it started last year, but it did start last year, as far as I'm aware. At the beginning of this year, they reached out to me again asking if I would like to continue to fulfill the student assembly role, because Narda was on the committee representing both women's liaison, but also representing the Women's Resource Center and a lot of the other work that she did. So now it's me, a couple of our core RAs, and the Everyone Campaign President who are on it. So I'm assuming that this recommendation would be for when that year long term expires for us in the future, the student assembly representative would just be the women's liaison. No problem. Next is Matt Boyfriend.
I'm such a fan, and I apologize for that. I just wanted to note that you really can't overstate the lethargy of the administration on this issue. Really everything that's been accomplished on this, including lowering of standards, was pushed for by the student group. No matter where you stand on the issue, all of the movement on it is happening from students. So I think it's really important to get people talking together like this. And I also wanted to note that, as proof of that, the survey that was mentioned, they said there was like some group of coming out of Rutgers, that they said we'd be working on our own set of questions at the same time, if analysis as soon as possible.
9 to 7 men. So 9 to 7 men is, you know, just when you start to get a grasp on. And I really think a more inclusive discussion, which is what is being proposed here, would be massively beneficial to, first of all, depoliticizing these issues, so we start making real progress, and bringing more groups in.
Yeah, thanks so much. And that kind of ends up, like, a major focus of this. Even, like what you're saying, that there's a lot of students working on this, and there's a lot of students who are really passionate about it. And I think this is another event where we can highlight what students are doing. The reason I want to bring administrators into this is just all A, for events for us to know what they're working on, but also B, to kind of give them a sense of, like, how much students are working on this and how passionate they are about this issue. So, definitely great.
Next is Representative Lisa Liu.
Hi guys, thank you so much for coming out with this presentation. First of all, I just want to say I really like the way you're implementing other revisions that keep these important sessions sustainable. I also read some lines from the three that you guys have you want to support and go to this. And I really have a few questions coming from this entire revolution. I guess my first one is, I know there is a bunch of programming events right now that focuses on sexual violence prevention. Maybe speak about the training orientation, which I think both of you were members or at least that were involved in last year. So I was wondering if you were able to speak about it now as a yearly event, or is this yearly event that you guys have on March 23 and will be separate event on top of all the existing programming events? And my second question is, have you guys reached out to other universities and investigated certain programming events and other initiatives that the universities are working on? Because I realize that this is a pressing issue at Cornell, and this resolution really does do a great job of working on meaningful changes on the ground here. But sexual awareness information is also a problem that all of our institutions especially with a lot of our contacts that I've seen today. I'm sure you guys have been reaching out, but I really urge you to use all of our
contacts. So, with regard to your first question, this will be a separate event to speak about it. I think this would be a good continued discussion after speak about it, which is an issue that we've definitely seen with regard to this issue, like how that discussion often doesn't progress afterwards. So, that's definitely going to be a good place to speak about it separate. And with regard to your second one, actually, as a result of the Council, I reached out to a lot of students in other universities, particularly students in the management, talking to them about their sexual violence education program. So definitely, I've had to talk about other schools, and I think that, this is an issue that needs to all of us. So even if it's a discussion that we have here, it's something that we really often like to also share them with other schools as well, and kind of keep that network going.
Yeah, just two quick things about the event component. I think the primary goal of this is to bring everyone who has a hand in this issue to the table and streamline/understand how the issue goes on the issue. So I think it's about transparency and clarity and consistency of messages that are being brought to students on this campus. And second, if you are interested in helping out anything, speak about it becoming obsolete event itself and you're trying to find something else that's new and I do think that's so I do think that we should be considering to look into different sexual assault awareness programs on campus.
Next is Representative Prince.
Kind of heard the discussion on that we were quite a bit. So I started thinking about the Council of Sexual Violence Prevention and its composition. And as you said, we wanted to involve all stakeholders that had something to contribute to the people of that discussion would allow us to make some real change. I wanted to know what representation of folks involved in off campus residents are to the co-op of the system on the sexual violence prevention.
Who's on the council?
Yeah,
I mean, there really aren't a lot of students on it. There are a lot of representatives from the different colleges, like administrators, the victim advocate from Gannett, Ann Cummings. There's some other people from Gannett, and the administration, Student Academic Services. Dean Hubble would like to speak, actually. He can speak on that, too.
Just an FYI, you know, the staff of the UC Trust get Gannett in position more broadly. It really was very energetic. Some of you may know that earlier this week, Molly Boy was here. She's from Yale. She's the director of the Gender, Sexuality, and Culture program at Yale. Yale has the last 4 years created this incredible program. It's really about changing the culture over the long term. And I think a lot of students went to that presentation. We're very excited about it. This is the second year we've been in touch with the folks at Yale. So I'm here to share that information with students and through the Sexual Education Council and others. They're doing an amazing job. It's much more fundamental than some of the things we do. It's about something that's human. This university over a long term to create a culture that's much more, I think, the way all of us want to have it. But just an FYI.
Yeah, that presentation was really great. And the council has also changed a lot since when it first started, and I did ask at the beginning, so maybe a certain degree of confidentiality has changed, and thank you so much, Dean Hubble, for offering to do that, because that presentation was awesome, and if you guys would like to respond.
Yeah, I actually talked to a lot of students who were in that as well, and I got to back to
Awesome. The last person on our speaker list is Diana Lee.
So, thank you so much for being here today. It's a great resolution. And although I don't have too much experience or knowledge about sexual violence and the different programs that have been established, for it, in the last year, I went to college and Smith College, where I came together and created a forum for open discussion in the darkness, because the darkness created some sort of privacy, but I was getting sort of a comfort in knowing that you can openly share your experiences and not be judged for it. It was just kind of anonymous, and it was a great forum. Everybody, all sorts of people, men, males, females, people. I don't know if you're from the left side, not perhaps looking out into your perhaps looking out into the center and doing the opportunity for people to just get things off the chest in time.
Great. Thank you for sharing your lovely campus. We're still working on some legality issues. There is a website called Breaking Crime Social Page spinoff of the event from last spring, which is an open moderated website where students in the area or anyone in the Ithaca area can share their experience with sexual violence in whatever literature form they would like to. That would be moderated. We're working on right now doing the student first metric to roll up soon, but it's been a longer process than we're
Motion to table till next week.
So there's been a motion to table. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? I'll let you speak your dissent for 30 seconds if you let me restart my timer.
I think we heard a lot of good arguments for this, no good arguments against this. I think our minds are made up.
Zero. All right, seeing that there was dissent, we are going to vote to vote. So if you would like to vote on this right now, please raise your placard.
Yeah, you have to do it the other way.
Oh, yeah, sorry. When I said vote to vote, I meant vote to table. Is everyone clear? if we are going to table this, if you'd like to approve of tabling this, please raise your placard right now. Table means that we will not vote on this today, we will not pass it or oppose it today, and we will just pick it up next week. So that's a vote to table. 1, 2 in favor of tabling. If you would like to oppose tabling, meaning that we can vote on it.
Motion to abstain by.
I'm still on the motion. Is anyone like to abstain? By a vote of 2-20-0, we are not going to table this. Now that we're back in general discussion, another motion can go on the floor. There's a motion to vote on the floor. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we can vote on this. Jordan, do you want to explain this really quickly? Great. So, please raise your placard if you are in favor of this resolution.
Oh, shit. No, but we moved it.
We moved it to business floor then. Yeah. Okay. That made me lose my count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. If you would like to oppose. If you would like to abstain. By a vote of 20-0, this passes. Thank you guys for all your hard work. There's been a motion to adjourn the meeting. Second. I'm guessing there's no dissent. So everyone have a great night.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.